The Verdict for OTI Racing,
where sport and lifestyle collide.
Find out more at oti.com.au.
On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
The point has been made that this is still a work in progress. He's very talented, but he's not the perfect racehorse yet, and he's not invincible.
Couple of so-so internationals come out and knock us for six yet again in a Cox Plate.
But for racing, Ole Kirk's had, what, six starts, seven starts? We don't want to see him retired.
There's an intense sense of urgency after the review of 2018. We've still had another fatality, so this has to be fixed before next year.
We actually need to come to the point where we have stats, we have understanding, we have input from all of the sources involved, and we can have a well thought out plan for next spring.
Jamie Carr's been an absolute revelation, not just this spring carnival, but what she's been able to do on and off the track. One of the great ambassadors for racing.
Is it a given that the racing crowd will necessarily transplant itself a month later and still be as engaged as they are in the traditional sort of mindset?
That is a big question. We don't know.
They're guesses.
Welcome to The Verdict. As we do each and every Monday, we look back and dissect what was a phenomenal weekend of racing around the world. Nice racing here at the Valley on Saturday and a few nice results that we'll talk about. Group 1 over in the west of Winterbottom. Some good racing in Queensland. The Horovian, 10 in a row. What a remarkable story that is. But the highlight, as far as we were concerned, was yesterday, the two J's, the Jericho Cup and the Japan Cup. We're going to cross over to Japan in around about 20 minutes and get what the local reaction was like and the fallout from Armand Eye's fairy tale final win. Matty Stewart, Mick Sharkey here as always. Matty, you would have been a pretty happy man yesterday, not being able to be down to watch the Jericho itself, but it's delivered once again.
Yeah, we were down at Aries Inlet and the kids had it on their phones. I'm driving and the two Jerichos are on, one in the back seat and one in the front seat on the phones watching the Jericho Cup. And you know how I feel about it. I just think it's got unlimited potential. I think it's such an important thing that's come along for racing at this time where racing's not an easy sell, and it's such an easy sell, the Jericho. So, I'd love to see some clear air for the next few years. We've had shocking weather last year. Yeah. We had coronavirus this year. It needs 3 or 4 years of unlimited development just to see how big it can be and where it belongs even. I've got a few ideas about that. But and then the Japan Cup. Wow, God, I couldn't believe she could do that against that field. I couldn't believe. She's now, probably haven't been many better mares ever than Armand Eye. So, yeah, no, it was a great double J day yesterday.
I like the racing.com coverage again. They've sort of hit the nail on the head a little bit with some of these major country cups, sending people out to the pubs and the venues around the place that are hosting race days. And the other, Matt Stewart, down there in the Western Districts going and doing it yesterday.
Not
and lobbing at the...
down at the Bull on Jericho Cup Day.
Yeah, the one I liked the best was the Woolsthorpe Pub, or the Woolsthorpe Hotel, that's and Colin McKenna.
That's his hotel.
Yeah, yeah, so Cole was there, and I think he was a few beers in, and he was great. He just spoke from the heart, and it was a really nice way to sort of paint the picture of the race day and what it means to that area without having the crowds on the track. I thought so. It was well done. But, yeah, without doubt, like Jericho Cup was great. Yeah, fantastic. But Japan Cup, oh, my God, what a race. But just, that was incredible. Just, what a horse.
Yeah, oh, wow. Especially given she's had problems throughout her career. But hearing Simon Wilde with you this morning, Michael, and I had a chat to him last week before the race where he thought he was only a little fluke's chance with his two runners, but he did really well to try and articulate from a racing person what it means outside of the racing bubble and how it connects. So... yeah, I'm stoked for Simon and for the jockey, of course. But, to hear him articulate it in a way that he did was really sort of hit the mark with me as well.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And the other layer of what Billy Gibbons has been able to do is I love that $25,000 bonus for the stable with the smallest amount of horses that can have a winner on the day. So Adam Chambers, who won the last, gets the $25,000, which is... it's almost life-changing for a trainer of that size to just have a $25,000 check lob, because what would that be worth? Like winning $500,000 race for a normal trainer if you take the 10% prize money or something close to that.
Well, you go buy another horse or two horses, depending on how high Adam sets his sights.
Everything about it has just been done with a lot of thought because it's aimed at the battler. It's not the Everest, where it's the elite of the elite. And these are the type of niche races that racing needs, and the historical context as well is what, as you said, Matty, everyone can jump on. So next year, I know you're a big fan of a Saturday standalone. I'm not sure whether quite at a Saturday standalone.
I want it in the school holidays. I don't want a Saturday standalone, but the school holidays.
You want it over Christmas?
Christmas, New Year, yep. Mm. Average temperature in Warrnambool is 24 degrees in December, so you're not going to get fried out. The holidays swell down there. All these people who aren't racing people who are suddenly down there, down at the beach, sick and tired of, you'd know this, with little kids. Oh, I don't want to go to the beach again. What else is on? Oh, there's this race on. There's this thing, but it's not just a normal horse race. If you feel a bit funny about going to a horse race, but this is all about
Anzac
Day.
What's Billy Gibbons think of that?
He's hearing me, but he's not necessarily... I think Billy's got a certain view of how high and far it can go. I think that it can go higher and further. I think a lot of people I've discussed it with think that, yeah, the school holiday idea is a good one, but Billy always wanted it close to the actual running.
I was going to say, is it to be done on that date, around when the original...
Yeah, but I don't think that's relevant. I think it can be loosely around that date. I don't think... If the argument for taking it away from that date is strong, I don't think the argument to hold it at that date, just because that's when they ran across Palestine.
The first year was on the anniversary of it, wasn't it? I think it actually fell beautifully.
100-year anniversary.
I think it actually fell really nicely on it that year, and that's great to get the awareness up and everything else, but I'm a bit with you, Matty. I don't think it needs to be hard and fast on that date or nearer to that date.
No, but I agree. There's no standalone said they wouldn't work because of wagering issues and so on. But I think the argument I've always had is that it probably... Yesterday was cold and windy down there. The previous year was freezing. The first year was okay. Warrnambool's a funny town for weather. If you're going to... You're 70% better chance of getting a more reliable day 3 weeks later. And I think that's really important. And then you've got a town that's population swells by four times its normal size. All these people in caravan parks and so on, all of them looking for something different to do during the holidays. Warrnambool's got three or four meetings through that period. I just think it's a no-brainer to me that they have to promote the hell out of it. And community-wise, and then they can get 20,000 there.
A few SMSs coming through saying, well, why not run it on Anzac Day or Remembrance Day?
Too cold.
It's already a meeting on Anzac Day.
Yeah, Flemington's got that.
I don't mind the bigger crowds. I suppose you'd need to speak to the trainers and work out what's going on there, re the horses. But, I mean, they're all pretty... Can you just give Hugo a tap in the belly and tell him to stop barking?
Every time I stop patting him, he's in love with me.
So, and I love the post-race interview with Luke Stumpy-Williams. Did you see that?
Yes.
It was absolutely phenomenal. He'll be on with Gareth Hall a little later.
It was pretty good, wasn't it? Actually, both the consult, the interview post the...
The last Fellgate dog that barked a lot disappeared.
It did, didn't it? We don't see old Snarly anymore,
what about
do we?
The Snarly? Yeah. There's a mound in the backyard. I don't know what that...
How's Fellgate clicking his fingers wildly? The dog is 405 years old. I'm surprised it still has any sense left in it.
I wish we had vision of the last
fingers.
3 minutes
It's deaf as a doorknob.
The look on Fellgate's face.
Oh, scorn, isn't it? He just hates it.
He hates that dog.
He does. Yeah, he does.
Ronan Short. If you had any idea how much that dog had cost, getting under the house and taking...
Is this the one that chewed all the irrigation?
Taking down the ducted heating.
Is he the one that chews all the irrigation and all that stuff? Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, yeah. Well, we look forward to the memory.
Hey, he's your nemesis. That's what Hugo is.
Let's talk about the Japan Cup, and we're going to cross here a little later. But having a look at the stats, 57.9 they ran the first 1,000 in, with Kosicki getting out to... It was like a Vorogue, like watching Vorogue back in the old days, out to 25 lengths in front. It certainly made the race.
Wouldn't Kosicki smash a Cox Plate with that style? He'd win a Cox Plate by 50 lengths.
Kosicki's won a St. Ledger over there, over 3,000, so
his effort was nearly as big as the winners.
He can stick, Kosicki. Yeah.
Well, I think there were eight Group 1 winners in the race, and of course you had the three Triple Crown winners who they ran 1, 2, 3. I think the trifecta paid $15 or
something. Fourth horse was a previous runner-up in the race.
So the class and talent was there. Did you think Armand Eye was the horse? I thought Contrail, the younger horse on the way up. What were your expectations of Armand Eye?
The way Contrail had been going into that race, it was... She needed to run to her absolute best to beat Contrail, given how that horse has been preparing. But she's a champion, so it's never beyond them. And there's always that sense of champion going out on top, the last race. You know, obviously it hasn't worked in Australia with some of our great horses in the last 20 years, but you just had that feeling that she'd be there to give her absolute best on the day. And I think the tempo probably suited her a little bit better than it did Contrail, because he came through a really tough run last start. And that stamina-sapping tempo might have just taken the wind out of his sails. But in saying that, she smashed them. So
you can't help compare.
She's a class above.
You can't help think about Enable at the same time, can you? Because poor old Enable got a bog track when she was trying to bow out a winner with a third arc, and you sort of wonder they never got near each other geographically. But I remember when Naam and I went to Dubai, and she smashed him in Dubai, and then she had all these injuries, and she was going to go to the arc, and she didn't because she didn't travel well, and she lost condition and all that. So I couldn't believe that she did what she did yesterday, because I thought, you know, to patch her up and that, and I couldn't believe she was favourite. I was astounded that she was able to be so dominant, and given the opposition and given the fact that she'd had all those problems and that. She might be the greatest mare that ever raced in this part of the, you know, this half of the world. You know?
Japanese putters do tend to wear their heart on their sleeve a bit and rally to those champions. You know, the public vote races that they have. Now, a jumper gets in, and the jumper's usually in the market because they're so well-loved, despite the fact they've got little chance of winning the race. And that was probably an aspect, too, with her starting favourite yesterday. I think the sentimental vote would have been well and truly in Almond Eye's corner. But
imagine if you'd ever seen Almond Eye v. Enable on turf, on a dry track
Almond
somewhere.
Almond Eye v. Winx.
And Winx thrown into the mix.
Almond Eye v. Winx, that's the intangible, that the first one that I thought of.
What about the barrier? What about the work of the barrier tennis pre-race? And you hear the English commentators were saying, oh, way to Paris, it's a long way to come, not to go in the gates. Are you thinking?
Are they not allowed to touch the horses?
I don't know. Maybe they're incredibly polite and they're just sort of trying to coax him in.
You know, like they were so polite. Yeah, Paris, will you please.
It's almost like they haven't, the one thing they haven't developed is horse management skills. But they just stand behind there and they don't know actually what to
sort
do.
Sort of wave their hands a little bit.
This thing looks dangerous.
Way to Paris, 9-year-old. He's just looking at them saying, nah, don't come near me.
There was 100 of them standing around it as well.
And ran well way to Paris eventually when he got into the field. I think he was last and he ran on and finished midfieldish.
What form did it have going in? Is there any link?
Way to Paris. It won a group one this season.
Good morning, boys. Read the Japan Cup. Do you think the connections will still aim for an arc with Contrail, considering he couldn't beat a retiring champion who also couldn't win an arc?
Listen.
The flip side, could Contrail lob in a Cox plate? That's from John.
Well, the winner didn't contest an arc, so it's not that she couldn't have won an arc, it's just that she never ran in one.
I think if any of those three ever found themselves in a Cox plate, it would be a greater winning margin than Winx.
Well, the thing that led and collapsed would win a Cox plate by the length of the straight. If it ran along like that, I reckon. But see, the thing with Japan and the arc is that they've had, it's such a frustrating thing. It's like a holy grail that they've never been able to get their hands on, so even Deep Impact couldn't win it. So I think they will. The problem with the arc for the Japanese is that they can never get a dry track over there.
No, that is the problem. Just to wrap up, we'll have a chat to Kate, who works over there. Now, Kate, when we get her on, I'll absolutely confirm what her role is. She's a journalist based in Japan, and she's the representative of the Breeders' Cup. Joshy Rodder put me onto her, Kate Hunter, so it'll be fascinating to hear what she has to say about what the build-up and the atmosphere was like, because, of course, during COVID, they couldn't have anyone there. It would have been ridiculous scenes if you were able to. But she now retires a winner of 11 of 15 of her starts, 9 Group 1s, and 24.9 million Australian in the bank.
The highest ever for a Japanese horse.
Just
and that's the most wins in Group 1 level for a Japanese horse too.
And, as you say, one on the international stage.
Yep.
Which is, that's the benchmark. Whether we like it or not, the best horses in any jurisdiction need to go and be tested against the best horses in another jurisdiction. I think that's the acceptable standard of super elite horses.
And Liz Crusoe flogged her one day a few months back, but that was, and Liz Crusoe is a great mare too, and the Japanese will probably have her similarly rated, but that was when Almond Eye was cooked, one of those times she was cooked and she didn't perform. So.
Yeah, Irima Kinin.
Yep.
We'll take a quick break. There's plenty to get through. I want to have a chat about the Winterbottom, the meeting at Moonee Valley. We'll also talk about more horses heading to Hong Kong, and the last race in Hong Kong yesterday showed exactly what we are missing out on here in Australia.
The Verdict on RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
The Horavian's coming, and Soxagon down the outside. Red Chase, the Horavian from Soxagon, but the Horavian has grabbed the lead. The cult figure looking for his 10th straight victory. What a star, the Horavian! The Horavian's won it brilliantly from Red Chase and Profit Flashing for third. Then Soxagon, Emerald Kingdom, followed by...
Oh, the Horavian, that was one of the most remarkable wins of the weekend. 10 wins in a row for the Horavian. We're going to tomorrow try and have a chat to his previous trainer, Steve Massingham, who was also part owner. He's now trained by Toby and Trent Edmonds. Originally, he was trained here in Victoria by Jim Conlon. He's headed up north. He became the king of Townsville and Cairns. And now, the last couple of runs, he's headed to town, and he's proven with huge weights that he's better than the locals.
He might be the new burglar of Banff.
That could be.
He won about... I think he won 21 in a row, the Berg.
Burglar of Banff?
You're too young,
Just. 21 in a row? No. I think,
Have a look. But anyway, look, it's just a great story, isn't it? And he just, obviously, the penny hadn't dropped down here with Jimmy the Hat, and then he went bush up there and got his act together, and he's crept closer and closer and nailed it yesterday. I don't know whether... what sort of a opposition he had yesterday.
It's a listed race.
Yeah,
solid enough race going into their summer carnival, and he was pretty soft on the line too, I thought. He'd be winning again next time, stepping up to, what, I think they're going to up into a mile.
Yeah.
Great story. Great. He really should become a bit of a cult horse up there, shouldn't he? Given the way he's racing. He's three in a row in town now.
Have you Googled Burglar of Banff yet?
I'll do that.
He didn't know who Kendrick Lamar was last week.
Do you know what? I've got more idea about Burglar of Banff than Kendrick Lamar. I actually was up there one day when he won as a kid on a family
holiday. You are old, aren't you?
It was the late 80s, early 90s. I'll get my producer right. because I haven't got time to.
It's probably schoolies week for you.
Hey, let's talk about Moonee Valley on Saturday. Jamie Carr once again to the fore, and I thought it was great to see the two winners of these listed races, the Carline and the Mackenzie, that were held across. Harry Coffey, who we spoke to on Saturday morning, Matty, after having almost a self-imposed exile during COVID about coming to town. He doesn't get that many opportunities. He came to town with Dan Bowman, and he took it by the scruff of the neck. And then to see Simon Ryan have the biggest win of his career, along with T.O. Nugent, in the other feature as well. I thought it was a lovely Saturday off-Broadway meeting.
And the Grandview Avenue's a bit of a Horovian too, isn't he? Like, he's just come from 0 to 58s and falling in and then winning a couple. And he smashed a good field on Saturday.
So I don't know
how he's found that extra level. But
that 35th start on the weekend.
Yeah. But Harry Coffey and T.O. Nugent, they're other good examples of how tough it is in Victoria and the reasons why a lot of jockeys are leaving. Because it's just, I think Harry told us on race morning that it'd been a long time since he'd sort of come to town with little more than a ride, and he had to make hay while the sun shone. And T.O. Nugent also saying the same thing, that he's been riding around the book. Lockie King was telling us that he nearly bailed out of Victoria as well, but then he won the Derby and he thought he'd better stick around. So, but as for those two wins, they were... I'm not sure what to make of the Daniel Bowman one. The market was right against him.
Got out to $10.
It's a good horse.
Got out to $13, I think.
He started to drift when he walked in the yard because he is quite light and physically mature. And I think, you know, they would have had a look at him compared to the likes of Deep Speed. He's quite a strong horse. And thought, is this thing going to be ready yet? But there's a motor there for sure. Segway off Grandview Avenue, ridden not on the weekend, but last start when it won at Moonee Valley by Will Price, who also rode a double there on Saturday. And two very different rides. Controlled the speed on Ocean's 13, really rated that horse well in front, used its natural speed, put him away on the corner and kept the horse going. I thought it was a very clever ride. And then in the last, he won on Bandersnatch in a really messy race. Everything inside was sort of getting held up, blocked for runs. There were horses stopping and horses wanting to go. He was back last as they started to turn and just kept easing just a little bit off the corner to get that sort of slingshot effect that they can get off Moonee Valley and put the horse in a clear area, and just gave it every chance, and the horse was good enough to do the rest. But two well thought out rides from a 3 kilo claimer. I thought that he was a highlight on the day.
I reckon Coffey's ride got out the gate because the market didn't think he'd get across as easily as he did.
Yeah, it was probably that aspect
too. He was going to get stranded, but he actually found his way across without really expending too much fuel. So just don't know where those two races are going for the winners.
I don't mind. The races themselves, I'd like to see remain on that day. It gave a little bit of
Well, otherwise, it was a rubbish meeting otherwise.
Sparkle to what would be a really off-season.
It was a 64 race on the program.
Exactly. And then we've got the Pakenham Cup this Saturday, so it kind of just threads it through a little bit when you've got at least still a listed race on the meeting towards the back end of spring.
Yes, no, absolutely. So, but I think part of all this big review is going to have to work out this back end. Does it make perfect sense at the moment with a lot of same for same type races? So, but the carnival does have to end at some stage. Like, is there merit in stringing it out, or is there merit in condensing it and making it as good as it possibly can be?
Yeah.
And then you just drift into summer racing, which is what it is. It's got its own appeal. You're not going to get 30,000 there, but.
These were only $140,000 races. They're pretty much standard Saturday fare, but with the listed on it, you can maybe get a horse that would normally be headed to the paddock, maybe hang around to try and get that black type or something like that.
Or a different style of horse coming through the 1,000-metre three-year-old race on Cup Day, use that as a bit of a launch pad towards something like a listed 1,200 at Moonee Valley. It's not the worst idea. You've got the Magic Millions race as well at Ballarat. It could fall out of that, the three-year-old sprint. Into something like this.
Track race pretty well.
I think All Band is probably the best horse to take out of the meeting.
Rietta was a big win.
Yeah, but
I didn't think she'd finish. I thought she'd be looking for more ground, and she probably is, but she put them away. November Dreaming was without cover and pulling again, so she's probably one to follow.
I'd rather All Banter than Rietta.
Oh,
One has won 3 of 5 and might be able to get away with a nice little sprint race.
Maybe. They ran faster time in the car line than her.
Oh, you'd probably expect them to, though, wouldn't you?
Well, if she wants to be... That was just a listed race. Just. If she's some black type horse, you'd want her getting a little bit closer in the time.
Why'd you organise a match race between the one you want and the one he wants?
Did you?
See what happens.
Prezzato's the horse I want to take out of it with summer racing. The next meeting down the straight at Flemington, if he finds a straight race there, oh.
You could see why he was well-backed yesterday, even though he's a Flemington horse.
He could be a Christmas turkey.
Yeah, he could win a Standish and maybe even run throughout the stumps in a weak lightning.
The first two winners were quite handy as well. Seb Song was nice. And
Could win.
Pulele, a two-year-old win. Gee, nice-looking horse,
Big
wasn't
chestnut.
It, from Team Godolphin.
There'll be some form to come out of that two-year-old race. Direct was a good run. It had trialled well. Mr. Schofield had trialled well and beaten older horses up on the synthetic track at Ballarat. He just got into a really awkward position and hit the line. Well, he probably wants 1,200 and maybe a touch further and a bigger track. He didn't look all that comfortable around there.
We can understand Stokesy's reservations about Brazen Boy now, can't we?
But rightly so. And you have to listen at some point to these trainers when they're frank, like Phil Stokesy. He's not one to really build them up. And he said... Maybe he can win. Maybe he's an 800-metre horse. I don't know. It was almost like the horse had surprised him by winning by 14 lengths in a trial. And then that second trial that we saw at Pakenham that wasn't as impressive.
Well, we tried to change him up a bit. But it just goes to show that, there are smart eyes on jump outs and trials, and it's easy to get fallen into as well. I remember when he won that jump out in Adelaide, it was, oh, my God, this is the next Miracles of Life, and it's going to do this and this. But a lot of horses do that and stop at the 800-metre mark on race day. So,
Jamie Carr extended her lead at the top of the premiership. She's now 7 in front of Damien Oliver. But the most
amazing,
incredible thing is not the fact that she's 7 in front, is that her strike rate is 20.1%. Ollie's is 11.6. Craig Williams is 11.2. Benny Mellon, 14.8. John Allen, 11.2. They're the top 6 in the Jockeys Premiership. She's got almost twice as strong a strike rate as what the other major jockeys have.
Well, and a lot of that's because, A, she's so confident at the moment and she's on the crest of a wave, but what happens when you start dominating is you start getting all the best rides. Like, she's getting the rides that would normally have gone to Craig Williams and Damien Oliver.
That's
a great point. She's getting the plum rides, not them.
I think it's going to be the story of the rest of the season, isn't it, really? Just watching her... ride and watching her continued progress to, who knows where the story's going to stop for her in terms of how good she can be.
Does she take a break to stay keen and fresh, or does she just keep ploughing on to make a good thing of winning the premiership? Or does that?
Do you follow the carnivals? Would she be getting the big rides in Sydney? Would she be offered those?
Why wouldn't she?
Yeah.
I think it's ignorance if you look at her and at any carnival in any state of Australia and say, oh, she's not in the mix for those Group 1 rides. She has to be. She's elite.
what would winning the premiership, given the historical significance of it, what would winning the premiership mean to her? Would it mean everything, or would she do what all the other jocks do and try and win the premiership, but also try and ride at the carnivals?
Well, do you remember what James Wink said to us on the final spring ticket about Jamie Carr, is that she's someone that he could see burning out because she likes her time away from the track. She's not going to be a five-day-a-week jockey. She may end up just riding two meetings a week, which is the two metro meetings, or the Wednesday and the Saturday, because that's when she performs at her peak.
But does she go against that to try and win the premiership and then chill out? You know, does she absolutely try and nail it for the next 6 months, or does she, you know?
She might be able to just ride those metro meetings. If she keeps running at a 20% strike rate, it won't matter. The others are going to have to really improve their numbers to get anywhere near it.
Well, and it's the Melbourne Metro title that she'd like to win, not the Victorian title. So maybe she can craft it around the metro racing, you know, and not lose any momentum. So,
see, in Sydney, Rachel King, four winners as well on Saturday. So she's now in the top five on the Sydney Metro Premiership.
And not often spoken about in Victoria, but a very, very good rider.
But I reckon there's the things that racing should concentrate on promoting at the moment are the things that they've never really bothered to, and one of them is things like the Jericho. The other one is this thing about there's no other sport in the world where the boys and the girls stand on
compete
the same
on
stage and compete. And I don't think enough is made of the revolutionary times wherein where Rachel King and Jamie Carr can win premierships and beat up Hugh Bowman and Damien Oliver every day of the week. I just don't think they've properly grasped what that means. You know, there's nothing else. You can sort of watch the tennis and sort of watch, you know, Chris Evatt-Lloyd, and then watch
Gee, look at Maddie
Bjorn Borg
coming out.
Have there been any
Chris Evatt-Lloyd and Bjorn Borg are the two tennis players you pulled out.
Is she still playing? but you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how they capitalise on it and how the marketing actually works, but surely there's something inspirational about Jamie Carr to young people in Australia to say, hey, what glass ceiling? Look at me.
Correct.
You know?
I wonder if there's been any work done nationally about the apprentice intake, male and female apprentice jockeys, since Michelle Payne's Melbourne Cup win, and then if they plot or can plot numbers, you know, with these leading female riders doing so well and being in the spotlight, if that inspirational factor, if it's coming through with that next wave of young jockeys, if we're seeing more young women saying, this is a career path for me, this is a sport that I want to give a go, this is where my future is.
But not even,
I think that's a real telling
but
point.
But not even whether this particular career line is for me. It is the idea that you can do anything, like, no matter what the career path is. I pitched to one of the race clubs a few years ago something along these lines, with school groups coming through and the female apprentice jockey talking to the school kids about, look what you can do. I've been able to do it. You know, life's full of opportunity and things like that. That's the sort of angle I think they have to take with Jamie Carr, Michelle Payne. It's not about you can be a female jockey too. It's about you can do whatever you like.
You can be the best.
Yeah.
Which they are currently at the moment. It's been quite remarkable. We're going to head over to Japan in a minute. Before we do, thoughts on the Winterbottom? Gee, he got him tight tricking. He was smashed.
He got into a takeover target price, and he's not takeover target.
Well,
that's the problem.
It was the end of the day. I think anyone that had won were looking to increase, you know, victories on the day. Anyone that were losing was probably looking at getting out on him, really. That was, I think, the scenario as much as anything. The horse ran really just may have been at the end of it. Who knows? Everything pointed to a really big run. I can't remember the gentleman's name that messaged on Friday and said he was the lay of the day. Well done to him. I hope he did lay the horse again.
I'll have to find it in here. Said, I told you he was the lay of the day, which is absolutely correct. Kudos to you. I don't think he's had a long campaign. That wasn't the trekking that we would see.
I reckon he ran brilliantly, but I just think if all the dominant horses from the east that have gone over there, but there's one thing they've had in common mostly, is that they're up on speed dominators.
Well, that's the thing
they're not going to get back like that at $1.75.
No.
And trekking's not bloody Chautauqua, so I just think it all added up.
That's the thing about Perth racing too. They go along more often than not at a genuine tempo. Horses in the first half of the field tend to be winning those better races. Celebrity Queen was a great run.
Can that horse come over here, Elite Street, and be competitive in a new market?
Who knows? Dan Morton's got a pretty good handle on what it takes to bring a sprinter over, given Scenic Blast has won a Lightning in Newmarket in the past. So he knows what is required. And again, the horse is only very lightly raced. You'd think it'd measure up to something over here.
Hi, guys. I told you Friday trekking was the lay of the day. I'm a Victorian through and through, but the quality of Perth racing is better than we give credit for. That's Mikey from Bendigo. Well done to you, Mikey.
I don't think it was about so much Victorian versus Western Australia. The horse had the best sprint form in, you know, or part of the best sprint form, that Everest and Minicana. It was, his form was better on paper.
Yeah, but how does that translate at $1.75 at Ascot?
Well, it was a matter of the price. At $2.60, $2.70, you're happy to probably take the risk. At a dollar something, no, probably not. It's a different story.
All right, we're going to head over to Japan now and have a chat to Kate Hunter, who's a journalist. She's also the president of the Magari Racing, a Japan-based representative for the Breeder Cup. Unfortunately, wasn't on course, but it would have been amazing to soak up the atmosphere of what the win of Arm and I meant yesterday. Let's relive the closing stages.
Armaday issuing the challenge. Glory Vase along the inside. Here comes Contrail and Corin Bouquet d'Or. Here comes Armaday. Armaday and Contrail. Armaday in a blaze of glory. She's starting to shorten stride. She's in front. Good on you, girl. Sayonara in your last race. Armaday wins. Contrail, Bouquet d'Or. Flashing home late. Daring Tact along the inside. Glory Vase.
Ah, it was an amazing win, Armaday. The fairy tale came to fruition, and Kate Hunter joins us from over in Japan. Kate, it's a pleasure to have your company on Racing Pulse and the Verdict this morning. Can you explain to us what was that like yesterday? Unfortunately, you weren't able to be on course, but what has the reaction been locally to that win?
I'm still in isolation quarantine from coming back to the Breeders' Cup, but it was... For me personally, just watching on TV, I cried like a little child. It truly was a fairy tale, the most beautiful race I've seen, I think, ever. The reaction here has been amazing. I mean, she's a legend. She'll go down. If she's not the best horse Japan's ever had, if she hasn't eclipsed the Deep Impact yet, I think she did at least second to him and would probably beat him in a race.
Kate, Japan celebrates their champions so beautifully, you know, from the little teddies and the merchandise that goes along with the best horses to the outpouring of emotion when they have crowds on track. How did people celebrate the win, not being allowed to be there? Because that's such an important part of Japanese racing, is that closeness, that proximity to the sport.
True. Well, one of the things that the announcers on Japan's Green Channel said, which I think was very beautifully put, was that in such a difficult year like this year is with the coronavirus and everything keeping everyone away, that the racing gods just smiled down upon us and gave them the most amazing Japan Cup of all time with three Triple Crown winners in it. And so basically no one's been able to be a part of it. Well, there was about 4,000 people who were very lucky to be there yesterday. But it was more that this year's racing in general has just been outstanding across the board in Japan. And so being able to kind of culminate in this one amazing event with these three fantastic horses, not only having Almondai go out a winner the way she did, but to finish 1, 2, 3 and it's the top three horses was, I think, something that regardless of where you were in Japan watching the race, it was a truly special moment.
Kate, you touched on it and we've discussed it. Just remind us again of the depth of this particular Japan Cup and then the race, the way it panned out. And also the fact that Armaday hasn't had a cruisy career with little niggles and injuries. And they've actually affected the way she's been campaigned. I remember she went back from Dubai to Japan when she was going to go to Paris because she just didn't travel well. So she's not the perfect machine, but to do what she did against the horses that she did it against, just tell us a bit more about those things.
Well, she hasn't necessarily been injured so much. She was still sick last year. She got a fever. That's why she didn't go to Hong Kong. I'd say there's just been a couple little hiccups in the course of her career. I think when she's given the amount of time required to prepare correctly for a race, like, for example, if you compare the 2 weeks she had in between the Victoria Mile and the Yasubikinin, where she came in second this year, versus the extra week she got in between the Tenno Show and the Japan Cup this year, in the fall, like, it made night and day, just having that extra week of preparation so they could do it right. They didn't have that type of preparation last year for the Arima Kinin, and so she's a horse that needs this particular kind of handling. You can't do anything last minute with her. And the only issue she ever really had was overheating a bit. She would get a little too hot when she would race. So taking her abroad where the weather might not be as suited for her proved to be one of those things that they were kind of iffy about. Though they did try to go to Dubai this year, but it wasn't her fault that she didn't get a chance to race. But I think that for the race in general, the quality of this race, I mean, you've got a Derby winner, Makahiki. While he hasn't necessarily lived up to his potential lately, I mean, he's still a Derby winner. Contrail and absolutely phenomenal this year. I mean, there's not a whole lot you can say beyond the fact they were both undefeated Triple Crown winners going into this race. But coming in second and third to Almondi the way that she won, like, there's absolutely no dark marks or no black marks on their resume for that. Like, if you're going to lose, you want to lose to someone like Almondi. Corinne Bouquet d'Or has always proven to be quite capable in her many runner-up efforts and top races. Glory Vase had a great race, I thought, despite finishing fifth.
So is she the best horse in the world? Was that the performance of the year?
Absolutely was in Japan, in my opinion. And the fact that you've got the quality of horses in this race, even just if you were to shorten it down to just a match race between three horses, it was probably the most spectacular race of the year, in my opinion, but I'm biased.
And she's now going to be a very, very valuable broodmare. Who's going to be the first sire, the first daddy of a Almond Eye foal?
Well, according to Mr. Katsumi Yoshida, who owns Northern Farm, which is where she'll be going, there's many stallions that were kind of on the menu for her, and they never really know for sure until the day of the cover exactly who she's going to meet. But the likelihood is it's going to be Epiphanea, who is the sire of Daring Tack, and it's a very similar cross. Daring Tack is Epiphanea and a King Kamehameha mare. And then with Almondi, you've got Lord Kanaloa, who's by King Kamehameha. So if they could produce a little, you know, almond tact, that would be great.
Gee, that would be phenomenal. Kate, appreciate your time this morning and giving us some context from over in Japan as to how big that win was. We'll catch up with you soon. Kate Hunter, who is over there. Bit stiff when you're the Breeders' Cup representative and you're still in the quarantine zone on Japan Cup Day after Breeders' Cup over in Japan. Outside of the Japan Cup yesterday, the other international race that I couldn't wait for was the last race in Hong Kong, and it had the Australian representation of Chenier.
And Eric the Eel.
Eric the Eel.
Shadow Hero.
And also Shadow Hero. Let's have a listen to the finish of that race. Enric Delight, now known as Chenier, won the race with Casper Founds, the trainer.
Ballistic King through the middle. Turbian Diamond is flying through. Enrich Delight's come right through the centre. It's Joe again. Enrich Delight won it. Enrich Delight from either Turbian Diamond or Ballistic King. Cracking debuts by the winner and the former Eel. Then came Invincible.
The former Eel, Turbian Denman, who just got beaten for second. But Enrich Delight, it got balked for a run. Joe Marrera at his best. I couldn't believe, Matty, it paid... You paid $9. Now, you declared Chenier at one stage the best horse in Australia. You must have filled up last night.
Richo was going on about this a few weeks ago, and I agree with him. I wish they wouldn't change their names. They've already got an identity. Like, and I'm saying this because I didn't know where he was.
If you're paying mega bucks for a horse, I think you're entitled to call it whatever you want. If it's Fat Choi Ichiban or Enric Delight or Happy Happy Joy Joy, whatever you want to call it, you can call it.
I suppose, but it's frustrating when you are dying to back a horse over there and you sort of lose track of who it is. Anyway, but having said that, all that class of Chenier with all those horses, none of them stood up. The Blood, Catalyst, so he's sort of come out of a group that proved not to be as good as we thought. And
I think they've all had issues.
Well, the issue is that none of them are superstars. So
they've had physical issues as well. We've never seen the best of Catalyst. Casper Founds, in his post-race interview, said that he thinks this horse could be pretty special, Chenier. So
did he do the vroom vroom again?
No, I didn't see that.
Hats tells me that the horses that went around in two races earlier were of a better grade than that.
Well, it'll be interesting because I think they're going to head towards a race on International Day. Shadow Hero came through that race as well. But I suppose the broader discussion, and we've seen maybe more than what we would normally in this COVID era, this COVID 6 months, is the farming of all of these horses. We lose the Sandown Guineas winner as well. The runner-up with the Victoria
Derby. They sold it?
Yeah.
There you go. Smart move.
He said this morning when we had a chat to him. So, is there anything we can do? You're a trader. You love this show because this is where you make your money.
Well, Hong Kong don't breed, so they have to buy their horses from somewhere. We're the nearest.
Should we cap the amount of horses that they can take out?
What do you mean, should we cap? You can't cap
that many.
You can't cap
it. Are we so wafer thin that if we lose five or six off the top
at the moment we are
nice horses like Chenier and that, and Shadow King's no sorry, won a couple of group ones, but he's not going to bring people back to the track. So are we so shallow
what's the depth of our group one racing at
no
the
but
moment,
what I'm saying is
but that's not because
we should
of Hong
be
Kong.
Bigger we should be bigger and better than being weakened so significantly by the loss of these horses. Why do you care
but
if they go there?
Hong Kong isn't
but I'm
the...
saying we're not better than that.
I know, but the challenge is for us to become better, where it doesn't make so much difference.
The reason our weight for age stocks are thin is not because Hong Kong keeps buying the horses. Hong Kong's buying horses from New Zealand, from Australia, from Europe. Hong Kong buys horses from all around the world. They just buy horses that suit Hong Kong. We just happen to produce a number of them that are very suitable.
And
that's
and
not the reason our weight for age horses are bad. It's because we breed for speed, then we retire them to stud.
And they're taking horses that they can place well over there. So they're not exactly taking megastars, because the megastars are, you know, so they're not exactly taking the cream off the top.
See, the cycle we're in at the moment is one that is not great for racing fans, is that the horses that we're slowly starting to follow as young horses are either retired to stud once they show anything, or they sold to Hong Kong, and then we buy the recycled horses back from the UK who have been racing over there in second tier races
and they've got issues
out here.
And then they win our best races to make us look silly,
or they break down. There needs to be a serious rethink. Not, you know, Mick Kent's a friend of yours, Matty. He and I have spoken at length about how this sort of problem can be resolved. Not horses being sold to Hong Kong, but the Australian breeding industry or racing industry producing horses that are better suited to develop into those 1,600, 2,000, 2,400 metre horses with some longevity behind them.
But as Michael's
we simply don't breed enough
to
of them.
There's a problem without an obvious solution, because you can't change the culture of the way we do it. And
everyone thinks they're going to go to Magic Millions in a month, buy 10% of a colt, and the dream will be, oh, this colt's got stallion, he's got stallion potential. And everyone will say, oh, he's got a stallion's pedigree. Oh, this is the one. If you look at the 1,700 odd horses that colts that are sold every year, maybe two of them are sold to stud. You know, that dream is, it's,
and our studs,
it is just
our
that,
studs are
a dream.
Full of sprint bred horses who stand for between $1,500 and $12,000. There is just an endless sea of these horses out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're doing to improve our depth. You know, I just don't see how it does anything for us. I just don't get it. So, but I remember highlighting this over the spring when I think the Cox Plate had one, I don't know what the numbers were, but they were low. The Melbourne Cup and the Cox Plate had something like 1 to 2 domestically created runners in the Cox Plate and the Melbourne Cup. One of them's a race that we've already conceded we can't breed horses for, but you would think that a Cox Plate would be full of high-class Australian-created horses, but it's not, and it hardly ever is. So, I don't know. It's a terribly glaring fact, but I don't know what you do about it.
We've spoken a lot about Japanese racing this morning and how good their horses are. I think a horse like Fierce Impact is extremely interesting in regard to its breeding future in this country. He's a multiple Group 1 winner. He's got speed to win at a mile. He probably is an elite mile. That's probably where he taps out, although he's won to a little bit further. But his pedigree suggests a bit more strength, a bit more depth there. Is he a horse when he goes to... And we've seen him over many seasons. He's gotten better. Is he a horse when he goes to stud that people support that deep impact blood? They try and tap that at a price. Could he be the sort of horse to revive that wait-for-age style horse in Australia?
Well, Morris is the other one. Masara's Japanese horse, Maurice.
Who is apparently in the mix as one of the suitors for Armadai.
Well, that's right. But it's not like we haven't had our opportunity with these nice overseas stallions. We've had an opportunity with a lot of them before. So, but Morris is probably one. Tosin Stardom. But if you want to attract the cream and mate them with the cream, like Tosin Stardom and Fierce Impact, they are scraps from Japan. They're not elite horses from Japan. They are Japanese scraps that ended up in our system. That's what happened. So Morris might be one who would be equally popular here.
Or Morris.
Well, Massara calls him Morris, so I'm going with Morris. Okay.
So. European stallions, likewise. You know, they come out here and, like, Coolmore's brought quite a few out. We didn't probably get behind Camelot. We didn't probably get behind Declaration of War. They had an impact, then they're off having a bigger impact elsewhere. There is a bit about that as well, when they're here, that they are supported.
And syndicates, if you train for syndicates, they want bang for their buck. They don't want to wait for 3 years. So it's all the parts of Australian racing that make it hard.
I get that conversation with the syndicate stuff, but you also want to have success. You want to have a good horse. And if you are playing in the strongest demographic, i.e. sprinters in Australia, and everyone's trying to play in that space, and you're there with your $5,000 to buy a share, I don't know, maybe it's me, I just think a bit laterally, but I'd like to play in a weaker demographic and give that $5,000 the best chance to get a return for me.
Well, speaking of a stallion, we should say well done to again, Zed. He sighed the winner of the Jericho Cup.
Well, of course, count to zero. There you have it.
Yeah, as well as the
Caulfield Cup winner and a Jericho winner in the same season.
And the Ballarat
Cup. Other one, Ballarat, yeah.
We're going to take a quick break on the other side of that. Did you read about the interesting exchange Brenton Abdullah had with the stewards in Sydney after a ride that was queried? We'll talk about that after the break.
Opinions. Everyone's got one. On RSN 927's The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict, 5 minutes before 10 o'clock. Interesting article by Adam Pengelly in the Sydney Morning Herald, which gives verbatim the steward's grilling of jockey Brenton Abdullah for his ride on Tricolours racing on the weekend. I'll read a snippet of it out to you, but it's intriguing. Now, Wade Birch, chief steward, says, what if I said your vigour inside the final 200 metres was just not an acceptable level to racing fans or stewards? Abdullah, well, that's your opinion. I don't agree with it. It's a very important opinion because we sit this side of the table. Abdullah, I understand that, but it's your opinion. I gave the horse every possible chance the way the race was run. Wade Birch says, is that Brenton Abdullah at his best? You turn the whip and give him one hit with the whip for a horse who has been held up for a furlong. You get to the outside, you hit him once with a whip. To be quite frank with you, your lack of vigour is very concerning. Surely aren't the racing fans and stewards entitled to see more from Brenton Abdullah, one of Sydney's leading riders? Abdullah replies, I've said exactly what I said. Do you want to keep me? Do you want me to keep repeating myself? The horse was beaten. He didn't make up any ground. I was riding him hard. I gave you fair reasons for everything. You just keep hunting me for the last 50 metres of the horse. And this continues until Brenton Abdullah eventually walks out on the stewards. So it is to be concluded.
Jeez, what are you... There's a bit going on there, isn't there? One is the steward endorsing something that society's trying to move against, is the whipping of a horse that the jockey's claiming is tired, but you've got to be seen to be doing the right thing and all that. And, you know, it always comes down to he said in the end. Like,
Brenton's the one riding the horse. If he felt the horse was beaten, as you say, why would he...
I've got to say I haven't seen the vision, so I don't... Yeah. Mm.
But it's just an interesting... I suppose, dynamic, the conversation between the two. And reading reports, Brenton Abdullah excused himself because he didn't want to blow up. So he probably has played it well, but it'll be interesting to see how that transpires.
And then how the inevitable appeal transpires, because it used to be a rubber stamp between the stewards and the appeals body up there, but this, I've noticed in recent times that the appeals have been increasingly successful in Sydney against the stewards. So Bowman was a good example.
Mm.
SMS is coming through here. Michael, you keep saying the overseas horses for the Spring Carnival. Now you're saying stop selling horses to Hong Kong. That's in regards to Steve. Bring the overseas horses. Well, yeah, I don't mind seeing the overseas horses come here to compete. But I'd still like to see the Australian trained horses, who are the next stars, stay here as well. But you can't argue when someone wants to pay $1 million plus for a horse. Ain't no deal done. They knocked back $2.5 million. Canaan, they knocked back $3 million. So yeah. How well did that go?
Well, we'll see with Canaan.
I've said it before.
Sell.
And it's not about getting... It's not about getting, $1 million. You have to be... It's a marketplace, right? So you have to be realistic. If you're in a position where you've got a horse to be sold, or there's offers there, you have to be realistic, because Hong Kong don't just pay anything for anything. They have true value, or what they see as value, placed on a horse, and that's what they go to. If you're greedy, you can miss out. You can, on the flip side, if you're place a proper value on your horse, you can do really, really well and earn more in selling it than you could racing it here.
Exactly.
In reality.
Just a quick one on, we've lost so many jockeys to interstate. Carlene Heffel, Brad Willer, we've got lost Ben Thompson, Steph Thornton, Dale Smith, Ryan Maloney, Michael Rodd, all these ones. Tommy Stockdale to New South Wales. Jess Eaton, I had a good chat to Matty Highland about this yesterday. He says that a lot of it's COVID related, where the top jocks stayed in town, and a lot of it was the green and the gold, where a lot of the top jockeys weren't allowed to ride track work, so they were riding more days. So the exodus that we're seeing now, he reckons, will continue, but it won't continue to the same degree. And he said, we're pumping out 4 or 5 ready-made, very good apprentice riders every year. That's getting embedded into the system, and it's just putting a lot of pressure on guys like Brad Rewiller and so on. So the phenomenon that we're seeing at the moment is going to continue, but it won't probably continue to the same degree of recent times.
Well, I think it's jockeys trying to make ends meet. I mean, they're smart. All of those jockeys who have moved interstate and are doing so well, that's them making the right career choice.
It's not a bad exodus that reflects badly on Victoria. It reflects on just how there are opportunities around Australia, you know?
Absolutely. And it's been so good to see Carlene and the other jockeys over there getting opportunities and taking them by the scruff of the neck and performing really well.
Maybe it sort of shows a bit about the skill set that our jockeys bring might be a bit higher maybe than another state. So, 'cause every Victorian who's left is killing it wherever they're going. They're not lost
more
in
depth,
the system.
More depth, you're suggesting.
Yeah, but Carlene was struggling. You know, Carlene would knock you out of a quaddy at Cranbourne on a Friday night. That's what she was. She's run trebles.
And I read your article, and Matt Highland said part of that reason is exactly that, because we have the best apprentice school in Australia, and every year there are 4 or 5 race-ready apprentices that are churned out of the apprentice school, which is adding to the depth of the jockey ranks.
Something has to fall off the other edge, doesn't it?
Exactly right. Boys, we're out of time. It's been another hour, which has gone very, very quickly. Matty, we'll read all about it today, rsn.net.au. Sharky, are you out into the tinny?
No, I'm looking at horses. Magic Millions inspection start today. So off to Musk Creek.
Ah.
Where's that again?
Flinders.
Flinders.
Oh, it is too.
Lunch at the Flinders Hotel.
You could probably tow the boat down just in case. What are you looking at yearlings for?
What's that?
To take the boat as well.
No, I don't think I can turn up to a farm towing the tinny.
That would make it wouldn't make you look committed, would it, to the yearlings if you had a boat?
I had a meeting on the boat on Friday. That was good.
It's all about images, you know, Matty Stewart. We will see you later in the week. I'll see you tomorrow. Sharky, I'll see you on Friday.
Yes.
Don't go anywhere. We've got winners to be found on a Monday. That's coming up next.